The session of today, my name is Catherine de Grave. I'm a developer evangelist with Microsoft Belgium and Luxembourg, and I focus on working with developers and designers on building new, on working on new technology. My focus last few months has been Windows 8, currently at consumer preview. Now, what we see with Windows 8, with Metro-style applications that run on tablets, that run on PCs, and all devices running Windows 8, is that there's one thing to learn on a developer point of view, and there's the second one that's really important as well, it's the experience. So how can you make your application a great Metro application? Now, in this session, I want to focus on things that you, as a developer, or as an information architect, a designer, but really also as a developer, you might be working on an application today. And what is the information that you have already? There's lots of information online. And actually, most of what you need to build a great application, a great Metro application, is already available online and is already available in one way or another. So let's dive into that information and see how, at the end of the session, I'll give you a five-step approach that you can apply to make your application a great Metro-style application. I won't be showing any code, just so that you know, which is possible at some times as well. So how are we going to organize this session? We're going to talk about the eight traits that make or that create a great Metro-style application. We'll refine those eight traits into five Metro principles, go review what those principles are, and then how are we going to apply those principles, the patterns, and also actual guidelines, so the do's and don'ts about Metro-style applications. We will then also take the five-step approach, in which you have five steps into creating a great Metro application, into brainstorming, into applying the learned patterns. And then we'll go over one end-to-app design that is published by Microsoft and go in review some of the elements in there that are recommended. And we'll close with some next steps. So Windows 8 with the Metro interface has been released as a developer preview at a Build conference in September last year, and we are currently at a consumer preview. The next preview will be called a release preview and will be coming early June. That's not a scoop, but almost a scoop we have for you today that was announced today. So this means until June we're working with a consumer preview. And then we'll have the chance to go into the release preview, one step closer. Now, in the Build conference, we had a session by Jensen, who's one of the directors of design in the Windows 8 Metro design team. And he talked about the eight traits, the eight elements, the big traits that make a Metro-style application a great Metro-style application. So I can for sure encourage you and recommend you to watch the session, but what are those eight traits? It's really about going for the first one, applying the guidelines, applying the Metro style design. We'll take a look into more detail in the rest of the session. It's about being fast and fluid, and fast and fluid means making sure that your application responds. It's about performance. It's about creating animations that mean something, not just for going from one end to the screen to the other with a certain animation. It has to be purposeful. It's also about scaling your application to different sizes, adapting layouts to different orientations. And again, we'll see more in detail how that translates into a principle. It's about using the right contracts. One great Metro application will use the right contracts. This means using search via the contracts. The contracts are the charms, and we'll show you what that is in a minute. It's also investing in a great tile. The tile is the entry point into your application, and it's also the public visible element into the start screen of the user. So your tile has to be alive, has to contain information that draws the user back in your application as much as possible. Make your application feel connected, feel alive, using the cloud whenever possible. It's also about roaming to the cloud, but roaming to the cloud is more than just using the cloud. It's also about making sure that the user using your application on different devices has that those preferences, those settings kept in sync. And the last point, the last trait, is embracing the metro design principles. Now, the metro design principles, and let's move to those now. The metro design principles, we have five principles. Now, metro design is really becoming the Microsoft design language. And the design language has five principles that define what the language is translated to, and these are then translated into actual guidelines. Now, the principles are not the guidelines, but are basic overall principles. So what are those five principles? Pride in craftsmanship, do more with less, be fast and fluid, authentic digital, and win as one. Now, let's take a look at each of them and see how that could translate into your application. So what is taking pride in craftsmanship? This one is really about being as precise as possible, about polishing your app, that it's really finished and detailed and delighting the user with small things. But it's also adopting the design patterns and guidelines. And the design patterns and guidelines are about implementing the right silhouette for your application. So let's take a look at what that means. Now, the design for metro applications is based on a grid. So if you have a designer background, you know probably all about grids. And grids are divided, well, the grid is set up into units of pixels. And so everything should align to those certain units of pixels. A certain font should always, in this example, even if you have a font of 10 or you have a font unit of 42, make sure that it aligns to that baseline on a certain level on the grid. Now, this translates directly into the templates that developers get when designing when creating applications. So these adopt those principles already. Now, how does that translate into actual metro style applications? So the grid will allow you or the designer to focus on where to align elements, where to keep lines or space in between. It's also about spacing. So apply the grid and reuse that grid. Don't start aligning everything all over the place. Because also you have to make sure that you apply so that your metro application applies or implements the silhouette of a metro style application. So by applying the grid, you get something like in this screenshot. You have title, you have your silhouette. Really, this is the silhouette of your metro application. Now, you can align elements differently, but make sure that users will get so used, the eyes will get used to that silhouette. Make sure you apply those if your application is implementing this type of design, for example, but align to that grid. An example of a number of apps, screenshots of a number of apps, you will see that your eyes will just get used to this silhouette. So apply the metro silhouette, and there's documentation, detailed documentation on how many pixels that is from the top and from the left and so forth. So align to those elements in the grid. Another thing that's really important into that craftsmanship principle is about using the right fonts, the right typography. We use Sago UI. But also the right font sizes to apply a certain, to give proportion to your content. So it's really about giving more value or more importance to certain elements by applying the right typography sizes. For example, here, elements have a certain value or a certain importance and so a certain impact based on their sizes. And these are a very used in a very proportionate way. So you see that even if you're using a 9 points or an 11 points by doing bold, by doing normal font, you get a different proportion, and that's really important to apply that as well. Now, another element that is part of the principles is doing more with less. Now, doing more with less is a core principle as well, and you will see that come back in other forms. It's all about content before Chrome as well. So where you in the past you have seen applications that are mainly about Chrome, about all the items, all the possible things you might do or go to in your application, you have 20 icons or, well, let's say 200 icons in some applications, into toolbars, into flyouts, into a tree view of where you can go to in your application. Metro style applications are not about how to get to something or the options of going into that section and that section and that section. It's more about surfacing the content. So that's why we call it content before Chrome. An example is you don't want your users to retain or to remember the Chrome of your application. Software itself, it's not important. It's about the content. It's about the content in the application that the user wants to use. So focus about the content and focus around what the user can do at the point where he or she is. It's really about using the right commands. So let's take an example. This is a sample application that could be a music player. While there's a lot of white space, well, not white space, there's lots of space in this case, but it adds value to the application. You use a vibrant photo that brings some context, that brings some type of emotion to the application as well. But the Chrome itself is really small, and it's the slider that you can see where you are. So content before Chrome, it's users will keep using the application because it's about the content, it's about the music, and not because I can do 10,000 things with the music and share it to all my friends and have 10 share icons on that page, if you see what I mean. Something else that is important in doing more with less and content before Chrome, and it's about removing, do not repeat yourself. In this example, in the screenshots, you can see I have a set of product names, and I have a favorite and send to and a download. But we are repeating ourselves here. Why do I need to have the same icon every time? Let's try to give that action context. So instead of showing 10 times the same icon about where I can go to or what I can do, let's focus on the content and simply remove those, but add them through, again, applying the principles or the guidelines of using an application bar, commands, by using commands. So when I select something, at that moment and only at that moment, can I do the favorite and send to and the download, for example. So this is a good example of how you can concentrate on content before Chrome. Concentrate on the content before showing the command bars. Showing two or three items, you could add extra command bars. Another example is the headlines, a sample application, where using the right commands, the contextual commands, you offer different options, not by showing the options on the screen and by saying, oh, you have 10 options, you have 10 buttons to do and this and this and this. Focus on what the person is doing in that moment. So nothing is selected and there's an app bar that comes up. Well, I can do some refresh, I can remove, I can do general stuff. Once I select, there's no an item selected, the first one at the top. And at that moment, I can go and read, for example, or do something contextual. So the app bars will also adapt and make sure that you hide and you show the exact commands. And then when then it disappears. Now, Before I move into the next one, I just wanted to go into demo mode and go into my start screen in Windows 8. Now, specifically because some of you haven't used Windows 8 yet, so let me press the home screen there. Now, I know that through live meeting, it can be kind of slow. So I hope the screen is coming through now. And you should see my start screen. And the start screen, it's also all about content before Chrome. There's not a lot of Chrome. There is some Chrome when I select elements by right-clicking, for example. But I wanted to show you two examples of applications that focus on content before Chrome. One of them is Internet Explorer, no pun intended on the Chrome part here. What you can see here is I can start browsing. And I normally don't even have any bars. I don't have any buttons. I don't have a navigation bar. I don't have an address. I just have my application. In this case, the web page itself. Internet Explorer 10 on Metro is a good example of content before Chrome. Now, if I do want to have some comments, some Chrome, then I can right-click or press right-click on the screen, and it doesn't come up. Okay. And I don't have a touch screen, so this one is not working. Maybe it's due to sharing with live meeting, so normally my app bar should come up and then show me the Chrome, contextual to where I am. Okay, let's switch to another application, showing also content before Chrome. I think another nice one is the video app. And the video app is going to show lots of content because, well, it's going to show my own videos. It's going to show videos that are available for purchase or for download. And when I go into one of the videos, let me choose the darkest hour in here. And I'm going to pause a bit because I know live meeting is slower. So let's just pause to have that content brought up into live meeting. And what I can see here is basically a lot of image, a lot of content, some navigation information like a back button, but then a very big play. And the play is simply going to bring me into full screen. Why? Because by default, I just want to see the video, so I want to be in full screen. And it can bring up the buttons to control the video. They just disappear after some time. And I can bring them up again if I need to by swiping or by right-clicking. But in general, it's going to focus just on the content. So let's pause that here. You see how this concentrates around content before Chrome. The Chrome is there, and it gives me direct access to stopping and to exiting, but it's really focusing on the content. This is just some of the examples. Let me go back here and go back to the desktop and to the live meeting, to the application. And in this case, I need to get back to the live meeting by going back into the presentation mode. Now, pride and craftsmanship, do more with less. Be fast and fluid, and I wish I could show this in live meeting, but it's going to be too slow to show you the motion. But be fast and fluid is all around having your application be very responsive. That's the first. It has to feel responsive, because otherwise users will just stop using it. That is why when you publish applications to the Windows Store, we will validate the responsiveness and the performance. But around the principle itself, it's making it responsive in a way that reflects what the user is doing. For example, you may add some small animations that provide some feedback that the user has clicked on it. It's about adding motion, and the motion for the Metro design principles and the Metro inspiration is motion that is used in Metro is coming from motion from broadcasting, from how TV and in the movie industry they use animations to show purpose, to show something useful. It's not just a ball going somewhere to animate. It's really purposeful. And you will see in the start screen of Windows 8 that when you go back to the start screen from whatever application, you have some motion there. And if you test it out yourself, you will see this is purposeful animation. It's going to bring you in a useful way, but a delightful way, going to bring you the homepage or the start screen again. In the same way, the way that you go into swiping and calling the commands bar and things like that is going to do small animations to show something. Again, in your own application, how can you apply this? Make sure that if you do animations, and some of the templates already contain animations, do them in a way that going from one page to another, it might help you to do the progress bar, but maybe you can just show an animation going from one to another instead of just showing a progress bar. Things like that, helping the user and making the user like to use your application. That's why we use the word delight. That's fast and fluid. The next one is being authentically digital, and this is a very specific one for Metro. There's two parts in this one. What is authentically digital? That's the first question. Now, we have been using digital for some time, but we're getting used to using more digital more and more in our lives. Going from with a phone, with fridges that might have screens. I hope someday we'll have my Windows 8 on a fridge. But anyway, life is becoming much more digital. And at the same time, you are on the move, you use your mobile, you use tablets, you use all forms of digital content. And authentically digital in a Metro-style application is about using that digital medium to the fullest. So what does that mean? One example is, think about icons that we used to have in Windows 95, or even some of them in Windows XP or Vista or 7. You have the icons with borders and with drop shadows and with... It's trying to move the real world into the digital. Metro is not about that. Metro is about being authentically digital and removing that physical barrier. So you won't see a lot of icons that relate to anything physical. And that's part of Metro. So how can you translate that in your application as well? Try to think how you users don't need any link to a real thing, to a physical thing, in order to use your application. It's about your digital content and how you move between computers, between types of usage. How can you do that in your application? It's also a very important one is by being authentically digital, you use the cloud as much as possible. Not just using the cloud to be connected, but also to roam settings, for example, a very important one. Users will be able to roam settings even from your own custom application where one user using your application on three devices can have the same experience, can keep the state. For example, I was playing a video just before. If I now move into my home computer with the same login, the same settings, why not just show me the same video at the same point? So you can use that in Windows 8. As a developer, you have an API for that. It's free. Use those roaming settings that will be copied between computers. I'll just want to show you something that is specific for Windows 8 and how users will be able to choose to roam those settings to be authentically digital. So if I go back to my desktop and if I go to the home, to the start screen, in the start screen, I'm going to call the charms bar by swiping from the right or by going with the mouse or by pressing Windows key C and then go to settings and then press the more settings button. When I press the more settings button, I have an option to choose how I want to sync my settings. So of course the user is always at control, but even here the user can decide. For example, in this setting here, app settings, Do you want to, or don't you want to roam and to copy, to sync those settings between computers, between devices, with the same username? So that's an important element to also try to tap into. Something else that's authentically digital, again, I hope you see some of it in the live meeting, which is slower to send in the rendering. But you will see that the live tiles, the home screen, is full of animations, but purposeful animations with up-to-date content. The fact that my applications don't require me to go into the application and see that I have two mail items, or go into my Fliptoast or into my People Hub to see that someone has posted something on Facebook. The live tiles will surface that information by using notifications, by using the cloud as a medium and all that. That's authentically digital. So try to think how your application could also benefit from that to make it authentically digital. So those are elements that make your application authentically digital. A last one is also, how can you go from something visual on the screen that is maybe not as digital and go into something more digital? I'm going to show you an example, which is the finance application. You would think not the most sexy of applications. You'd be surprised with the finance application that's by default, you can install by default on Metro. What you will see is this application is very Metro. It's aligning to the grid, of course, but it's also using some large, big images, some bold images and colors to give much more context, to give a delightful user experience. So what you can see here is I have some of the stocks, some of the markets. And then I can go into my watch list. Now, the watch list implements something called semantic view. And if I do a pinch gesture, or if I use my mouse and scroll wheel, I can do a semantic zoom on the information that is typically authentically digital, because in a real world, you're not going to do that abstraction of the view. And semantic view, you can implement in your own applications as well. So this is an example of how semantic view allows me to go and browse very quickly to a certain element in a certain level. Just zoom out again there. All right, so let me switch back to the presentation. The last Metro design principle is about, it's called win as one. Now, what is winning as one? It's about working together and working with other applications to implement better scenarios. It's really, when I translate it into something simple, it's 1 + 1 = 3. Well, not 2 in any case. How can we translate it in your application? Well, some of the examples are using contracts. And what are contracts? In the meantime, I'm going again into my desktop and going to show some of the contracts. So contracts will allow me to go into one application or integrate my application into the OS and into the ecosystem. So one of the elements that I can do, one of the contracts that I can do, is sharing content. The other is searching. And for example, the search, if I call the charms bar, this is called the charms bar at the right, I can do search. Well, search can be done not just in files and in applications and in settings. I can also, my own application can integrate with the system and allow me to do, for example, I'm going to search for, let me search for Metro. I'm going to search for Metro, not just in apps, as I can see the results right now, but my custom application, in this case, let's go to Fliptoast, which is an online Twitter application. It's going to allow me to, and let me see if the results are correct. It's going to allow me to return the results for the searched word Metro. At the same time, if I'm searching for Metro in Flixster, see if in any movie called, well, there's some videos, some movies with the results for Metro. So this is your application not having to, it's your application implementing the search contract. So search results right out of the system. So it's natively implementing the search contract. In the same way, it means your user doesn't have to go open your application and then try to find where to search. It's just part of the system. And the same way, sharing contracts, for example, I clicking on one of the movies here in Flickster, I can call the share contract, which allows me to write from this page, from any page in a certain application, if the application implements it, it's going to allow me to mail the information or to tweet it or to send it to Facebook. It all depends on the other applications accepting your type of share. So this is implementing the contracts. And by doing this, your application doesn't have to implement 10 like buttons, one for Facebook, Google Plus, and all those kinds of sharing, social sharing. You can just rely on the fact that your user will have applications installed that do it. On the same way, you can upload photos to a certain service by sharing the photo and those kinds of things. So make sure you implement those to be more, to complete, it's actually to your application can complete more scenarios by implementing the share contract, the search, and working together with other applications. Because Metro applications should rely and should focus on one, on being great at doing one thing. Let's go back to the slides. So those are the five principles that you should read about, you should learn in order to create your application. Now, of course, we translate these principles into guidelines and into patterns and into more detail. And that's the next step of the presentation. So how do we go about applying those principles and applying the patterns and the guidelines behind it? To do that, there is great information, great documentation already on design.windows.com, so dev.windows.com, and then you choose UX guidelines. Now, there's a lot of information, really a lot of information. There's more information coming from the team. You know, we are a consumer preview today, so it's not finalized yet, but there's enough to get you more than started. The thing is, there's so much information. What is important for you, maybe as a developer, going out of your comfort zone, what do you need to apply, what do you need to take into account? So let's have a look at how do you use that documentation and how can you take most advantage of it. So the UX documentation is basically around several big topics. The first one is around patterns. How can you apply patterns? And let's browse into that information for the moment while I'll go over it. So when you're on the homepage for the design UX for Metro, you have design patterns. Design patterns, we'll look in a moment in those UX design patterns. We have three patterns. Navigation, how do you implement navigation patterns? What are they? How do you implement commanding? And then touch. Touch, Metro applications are touch first, optimized for touch. Work great on keyboard and mouse as well, but touch is a very important element, how you implement the right gestures and all that. So we will see in detail the commanding and the navigation patterns. Then you have the detailed UX guidelines. Now these are very detailed. They go into navigation details, well, the patterns which we will discuss, but also how do you do animations, how do you do specific touch interaction, how do you go about implementing that semantic zoom, do's and don'ts. It's really about specific UX guidelines. A lot of information there. I'll come back to some of it later. What is also in the documentation, you can download design assets, which today are in PDF, so PDF files that you can use to open in Photoshop, and PSD files, that you can open in Photoshop and have your designers use with the grid lines, with the right spacing and all that. Information about how can you test usability. And there's some checklists that you can do. There is some work that you can do and apply through some templates and then go through your application. It really will help your application be even more usable. It's not just about usability in a keyboard-only scenario, but it's even for touch as well. And then we will look into end-to-end app guidance more in detail. And as a last one, which I will not show in detail, there's also two at the moment, two case studies which will help you a lot if you already have something. For example, if you already have a website, well, how can you transform that into a Metro application, which is a native application? Let's go through some steps and where to do what. Implementing the principles, of course, the five principles, but also implementing the right commands and navigation. And there's a second case study, which has been also done together with someone from Belgium working in Seattle, someone, a designer from a UX designer from Belgium named Bart Klaas. He has worked together with Microsoft people to create this iPad to Metro style application. Again, if you have a Metro, an iPad application, or your application is some way similar to an iPad application, you can see how this would translate into Metro design, which is important to integrate with the Metro system. So again, a lot of information, and that's why I want to make sure that we go through a few of those elements. Let's go back to the presentation, to the slides, and let's start with the first part, the design patterns. So design patterns are about navigation, commanding, and touch interaction. How did we translate this? When you create a Metro-style application, we have two navigation patterns. One is called hierarchical, and the other one is a flat. So the hierarchical navigation pattern is best used for applications that present a lot of information to the user. Typically, we go in three levels. The hub page, which is the hub page is really your application. It's the home of your application. It should be able to do most of the things your application can do. And then users will dive into categories and further dive into detail pages. The hierarchical navigation pattern is what you will see in a lot of the templates, in the grid template or in the split page navigation template. And it is also used in a lot of video applications and not so much in games. Some of the games do use it. And a good example of the hierarchical navigation pattern is the store, the Windows Store itself, where you can dive into categories. It's also some of the news apps, and the start screen itself is a great example of hierarchical navigation pattern. So if you have a lot of content to present in different categories and sub-elements and detail pages, this is a great way to navigate your application. The second, before going to the second type of navigation, looking more into detail into the pattern, the component for hierarchical, typical hierarchical navigation pattern. So how does your, how do you lay out your components? Again, aligning to that grid, you have five big areas in your screen. You have the full content area, which is your content, not the Chrome, the content. You have number two, which is your section. So the section areas that dive into, well, sections or categories. The top header, which will also either have the back button or and have number five, which is a subheader or category navigation. So it's a flyout menu or a drop-down menu that we call to allow you to browse between levels in that category or between information in that category. And typically, it will also take you back to home. So it will also give you a direct link to the home, again, to the home of that hierarchical navigation. The number six is applied in many times also to hierarchical navigation, where you have a lot of content, and where number six will do the semantic zoom, allowing you to focus or to display the information of your hub page or your home page in a totally different way. It's the same level, but it's going to abstract it to, for example, instead of saying, I have three categories of news items and one category has five news items, the other has two, and so forth. Semantic zoom might just present the number of items of news items into that category. So five in a big blocks, and then two, and then seven, for example. And then I can dive in directly into a specific element. So it's going to be very digital, and that's semantic zoom. Now, I think there's a slide missing here for the flat navigation pattern. Let me just go quickly back to the flat navigation pattern, which is in here. The typical flat navigation pattern is if you don't have a lot of levels, if you have one level and you browse to that level. For example, a slideshow. Photos in a slideshow are a typical flat navigation pattern. And Windows Explorer, Internet Explorer, Metro, is also flat. It's all the different screens that are open, and in there, then we have pages. So that's one of example of flat navigation. There's also ways to implement, to combine both. At some levels, it might make sense. So navigation design pattern, the second design pattern is the commanding design. The first thing you have to do when using commanding is make sure you adopt the typical gestures that users will use. For example, going from the right, you have the charms bar. Going from the bottom or the top, you have the up bars. You have normally a bottom up bar. You can also have a navigation bar in the top. And the second thing, once you have those design, those gestures and those commands that users will use by doing swipes or using the mouse, make sure that when you create commands, you create command sets, group them into different sets of commands. And instead of having 10 buttons to filter something, group those commands and use context menus. So drop kind of contextual menus, we can call them, to instead of having the filter, as you can see in the example on the right, instead of having 10 filter icons, have one filter icon that allows you to filter by 3 or 4 different criteria by having that in the menu. It's going to allow your application to show less Chrome again. The second thing with contextual, with commanding and menus, very important, is the guidelines that we have around how do you group and place commands. So the guidelines are, when you have contextual commands, they should only appear when something contextual can happen. For example, when you select something, select an element on the start screen, a contextual command will allow you to unpin that start screen element. If there's nothing selected, don't show that icon. Don't gray it out, don't show it. And you show all those contextual commands on the left. When you have commands that are general for the page or on the application itself, show them on the right. Group those commands on the right because they will always keep, it's kind of persistent commands. So those are the guidelines about implementing commanding. The third is about implementing touch. Make sure that you use the predefined gestures that users will learn to use in Windows 8. You have the tap, just for browsing, for activating something. You have sliding. You have pinching for the pinch for the semantic zoom. You have rotation. You also have the swipe to select or the cross slide. It's very important when you implement slide to a swipe to select something, that your selection is reversible. Your user should be able to select again or to swipe again and unselect. So implement those gestures, but in a way that is common for the user. There's, you also have a slide from the edge. So from the edge, your application should not do anything because that's system-based. And then you have press and hold to learn more information and to show tooltips. There have been a lot of studies around, so the Microsoft, the Windows team has done a lot of studies around how people use devices, and specifically this is for tablets, for example, and how users use them in their sitting down in the evening, in the couch, and hold it. And these are the areas, you can see the white areas, which reflect best elements for commanding. That's why you will see the commands up bars are normally in the bottom, the charms bar is in the right, because it's very easy to swipe and select. When you have a lot of reading information, you can see that the top level is the best for reading and for showing information. So again, try to implement those in your own applications. Now, you have the patterns, and then once you dive into those, on that same homepage that I showed you, you have all the UX guidelines. Now, the guidelines go into a lot of detail. They will also tell you how you can implement controls and how for this control, for the list view, you should implement it like this, and the more, even more details on implementing contracts, implementing scaling. So again, enormous amount of information, but dive into those that are important for your application. So there's the page with the thing is you have to go through the page. There's really a lot of information. I recommend you to go over the elements that you implement, the most important ones, even if you're not a designer. It pays off. Now, we have seen the introduction, the basics around Metro design. We have seen the patterns, the three navigation, commanding, and touch patterns. Of course, that's a lot of information. How are you going to apply this to your application? If you are a developer, you might feel overwhelmed. And I have a few steps. I have a few a five-step approach that we use to help you adopt adopt those principles and adopt the right stuff to make your application a great Metro application. So what are those steps? First of all, when you're doing a Metro application, if you have started, if you haven't started, you're going for an application soon, let's go over the five steps. So first of all, your application, Metro applications focus on one thing, or at doing one thing really well. So one of our guidings is number one. When you start, sit down with some people and brainstorm. Think about one sentence, very unique and very specific, about what is going to make your Metro application the best at something. It's the best application that you can use to do Facebook. That's a very specific. That's a very common one, maybe. There's so many social apps. Let's see. My application is best at finding a restaurant. My application is best at calculating something. My application is best one at following news. Whatever your application can do, write one sentence down. Don't make it three sentences. And you should focus on that. Once you have that best at statement, from there it's easier to start eliminating, because we have a tendency to go for too much. So the second step is you brainstorm, sit together with people in your company. If you're an individual developer, sit together with friends or with people that can give you ideas and that can challenge you, or sit together and brainstorm with yourself if that's needed. It can help as well, and write down a lot of stuff. And then bar everything that is not a scenario that is going to help you achieve that best at statement. Remove 50 features and keep 5 features. That's important. Keep the 5 features that make your application the best at, and don't offer 20 other features that some applications might already offer and that you will be able to implement, but maybe just so that I can say I have 10 features. Features are not important. Content is important, and what your application does at that content. So that's choosing the right scenarios in your brainstorm about what your application is best at. Keep those 3 to 5. Those scenarios are your best at statement, are your application. Then number 3, pick your navigation pattern, flat or hierarchical, again, depending on the application. We'll have a look at one of them in a minute. It's important to pick that navigation pattern, because that navigation pattern is going to define how your application is going to go from one screen, one content to the other, and how the user is going to flow there. Then the number 4 is how you're going to lay out your content. For example, if you're using the hierarchical navigation pattern, you're probably going to have a hub and have big blocks of information. But how are you going to lay out those blocks? Just list view with all the elements? No, you have to go further. You have to also to make sure the main active actions and the main best at scenarios are available. Your hub page should translate your scenarios. You should translate number 1 and number 2. Those scenarios should be available from the home page. The hub page, the home page, is your application itself. So concentrate on laying out that content. And then the last one is using the right app bars. And the right app bars, as I was explaining with the patterns, is around showing the app bar that is context-based, contextual. about grouping items in the app bars. Don't show too much Chrome again. App bars are Chrome, but they are needed, of course. So integrate those correct app bars. Once you have that, you have a basis for a great application. And of course, implement the principles so that you implement the right contracts, that you communicate with other applications through the sharing and or sending to devices and all that. And by following these five steps, you will be able to create a great Metro application. Now, let's dive into one example. So I was showing you the UX guidelines and the UX information online. There are three end-to-end app design documents for now. One of them is around the news app, another one is an entertainment app, and another one is gaming. And so they go over an application and how could one application be great at being an entertainment app, and how does that translate to Metro? And so it's one of the great ways for you especially if you're not a designer or information architect, you might get a lot of help by going through those end-to-end designs, as well as the scenarios, as the use cases. But let's go through the end-to-end app design. Now, when you start with your app design, you can start with a template in Visual Studio. So you have the template that already is using the right grid alignment. That is going to help you a lot to adopt the Metro design guidelines, to adopt the grids, to align to that grid, and use the right typography. But as we'd like to put it, when you use those Metro templates, the templates are fantastic to start. But remember one thing, the templates are not the place where you want to end up, where your application wants to end up. If you end up with an application that looks like a template, like this one of the templates, then I think it's pretty safe to say your application is not a great Metro application. Again, you could prove me wrong, but think about it in this way. If you end up where your template started, chances are you will have just a normal Metro application, but it won't be a great application. So, as the last element in this session, let's go over using the app-to-app design, end-to-end app design, using one of them, and in this case the entertainment one, to go over some of the guidelines and some of the recommendations and how you can make your application a great Metro application. Again, if you're not creating a media application, it's still useful, so let's go over those. So I took some of the screenshots in that document, because it's a big document, and you have your, this is an hierarchical type of navigation, because you have a lot of content to the user, and you have a lot of levels, and you have then favorites, and you have all types of things you want to present to the user. And it's very visual, because media is something that the content has to come up the front. So in this case, choosing for a hierarchical navigation, this is the hub or the home page, with alignment to the grid. There is a logo of the company, so it's not Sago, it's the logo of the company. Again, it's aligned to that grid, to the silhouette of a Metro-style application. Then if we dive into the application, we go one level deeper, for example, in TV series level. In this case, there's a navigation pattern to go back, but there's also a navigation pattern implemented in this hierarchical navigation, which has a drop-down. You could use a header navigation to browse elements in that TV series category, to go much faster into that category. Notice also, it might be small, but notice at the bottom you have a button or a command that takes you back to the home page, to the home of your application. So this is one way of implementing navigation. Another way of going around in that category in the TV series is by using the zooming. So the zooming will allow the user to go directly into a certain category much faster than going by using swiping and moving around with the mouse to browse to the information to the left or to the right. This is horizontal panning. So we do, just as a side note, we do recommend that panning, it's also in the UX guidelines, but we recommend that you pan through the axis that has the longest, in this case horizontal. If your application is in portrait mode, you can do vertical panning because that's the widest angle. When you go into, this is in the TV series, for example, you go into a video-specific TV episode. Well, in this case, when it's a single item, one media episode, going to full screen and play the video. Probably, if the user is going to go into that video or film or TV series episode, the user is going to want to watch it and not just read about it. So the recommendation is go into the detail into full immersive mode. On the other hand, if the user is browsing the information of a TV series and not an item itself, probably the user wants to pick and choose which episode he or she wants to watch. So present the information in the full series mode, and then let the user decide which episode to watch, and again go into that full experience. Now, the full experience, what we recommend is have navigation at the top. It's also the document goes into more detail. It's also about having your Chrome, your commands in the app bars, but also having commands on the canvas itself. And in this case, if I want to go to the next episode, I can just press on the canvas. I do not need to go call on up some other context. I can just do it directly on the canvas. Another element that is important here is the app bar. It's not context-based, it's specific for an episode. And you can just switch views, for example, by using the app bar in context as well. So instead of by default using all the views, just make sure that the application in immersive mode allows you to switch back to normal view by using the app bars. The user doesn't have to look for it. There's one other element that is important for me to highlight here. It's around navigation pattern. You can see there's a back button. There is hierarchical navigation in this application. But in the level of a TV series in this case, with a lot of episodes, you can also see at the top, there's two episodes there. And this is now implementing a flat navigation pattern at this level. So see how you can use this documentation to get inspired and how to combine hierarchical and flat navigation. So user could choose other episodes at the top. Just for music and media apps, basically, you also have something called the system transport controls, which you might not be aware of, that allow you to tap into those controls and allow you to control the playing of music, even if your application is not on the front. And how does that work? It's by using the controls on the keyboard or on the device. If you have a volume up, volume down keyboard, this will call up that interface. And it's important to tap into that. If you're a music app, it would not be a great application, metro application, if you didn't implement this. So this kind of information helps a lot. Implementing contracts, of course, make sure you implement the search contract to search from within your application through the charms or from within any other application, choose your application. And at the same way, make sure that you implement share contracts when you have elements to share. So the person could use a screenshot of the video and have a default message with the link to the video, or just have a message that you could share on Facebook. I just watched this, or I just read this book, things like that. Another element that is already discussed in this session as well, but that they present in this end-to-end app design, is how can you adapt your layout to orientation on one hand and snap view. So orientation is around making sure your application adapts automatically when the user changes orientation, specifically in a tablet, where you can go into portrait mode, into landscape mode. Do you accept that as an application? Are you compatible with that? And how are you going to change your design? So depending on managed code or HTML applications, you're going to respond. You have your APIs to do that, or your controls and your ways to implement that already. If you're going for SnapView and your application is required to implement SnapView in some way, SnapView allows users to snap one application and keep one application in almost full screen. It's a 320 pixels wide snap mode, so your application should decide what to do in each view. What happens if I'm in snap mode? I should show the information smaller, show smaller images, so that there's no scroll bars and all that. So make sure your application implements SnapView as well. And in this case, this could be an example of how probably you're not going to watch a video in snapped mode, but you might have a radio player in snapped mode. It's totally usable. So think about how implementing that SnapView in your application is going to make it great. And also to make your application go up into the front in the start screen is implementing live tiles. An application without live tiles is not going to attract that many users back, is not going to pull users back that much into the application. It's not going to show any updated information. So of course in an entertainment app, you could have information about new movies or new episodes being available for download, or showing the picture of a certain actor will draw users back into the application. Second thing is implement secondary tiles if useful. A secondary tile allows you to deep link into the application and also update that tile with new information in the secondary tile. So a news application could do that for a category. Could be one document on certain things, could be a TV series, could be whatever you think people will make people pin that to the start screen into a secondary tile. User's click will be taken directly into the deep link into that application. You can use that through the API. So I hope this has given you those five steps. Is first, read about the information, inform yourself, get informed, and how Metro design works. And then, if you adopt those five steps, I'm sure we will be much closer to delivering a great Metro-style application. We have seen the 8 traits. We have seen the 5 principles. We have seen the navigation, how to navigate to UX documentation, the three patterns, the design patterns, navigation, commanding, and touch interaction. And we have seen also the 5 steps approach to creating a great Metro-style application. Now, just to finish off, before going into the questions and the Q&A, one thing we recommend is that you work through brainstorming and that you work with mock-ups or simulations or storyboarding or whatever you want to call it. You can use paper, you can use Balsamiq and Nexture and some of those tools that information architects use or UX people, designers use, depending on the tool. Photoshop is also usable. There's something called Expression Blend Sketchflow for storyboarding or for really quick prototyping. You can still use that. There is not a specific Sketchflow project or implementation for Metro. I do want to inform you about that. However, in the Visual Studio 2011 beta, in the ELM edition, if you install the full edition, you will see a new storyboarding feature in PowerPoint that allows you to do storyboarding for Visual Studio ELM. Well, in there, you already have the Metro-style icons. So you have a set of icons that will help you a lot. You have the bars, you have charms, you have some of the icons, some of the controls as well. So take a look at that if you're doing storyboarding for applications. Now with that, just going to inform you and recommend that you attend our events. We have a set of free online events like this one, but also training events like this week. We have the first Windows 8 Camp hands-on. We have the Microsoft Innovation Center events that are already going on. Once you have your idea or you attend a training or you do start your application yourself, if you have questions, if you want to test on more screens, on more monitors or more devices, if you have some technical questions, want to talk to us, UX questions, want to talk to a consultant that maybe help you with one specific problem on your application, be it in XAML or in HTML, or in C++ or C#, make sure you register for the app clinics twice a month. We are here at the office in Microsoft Office in Zaventem, and we are here to welcome you. So sign up through the through that MetroMap URL. Once you have that, we will be able to give you a kind of a ticket to something called the App Excellence Lab, which is going to go through a Microsoft engineer, going through your whole application, test it for performance. And if you pass that, you can get a store token. At this moment, store is not open to everyone. So if you want to publish something on the store, be one of the first, this is the way to do it. So make sure that you register and come talk to us. And then just to finish off, I wanted to make sure that you have the link to the design resources, either dev.windows.com, design.windows.com is just a shortcut. Make sure you use that information. And with that, I would like to thank you a lot, and I hope you are working on Metro-style applications. I'm looking forward to helping also many of you implement the great Metro design. Now, before ending, I'm going to go into the questions. So let me take a look at the Q&A and see if I can address all the questions. So I have the first question is around. Let me read the question. Does skinning have a meaning in the context of Metro Windows 8? Does branding have a place, meaning? Oh, sorry. Does branding have a place, meaning the whole guidance is quite restrictive and how much offset is allowed in the order to be accepted in the store? Okay, a very good question. Actually, two or three questions. Of course, you are totally allowed to do your own skinning and theming and using your own colors. We deliver, by default, the style sheets that... What do? They adopt the right alignment to the grids. It's important that your design aligns to that grid and aligns to the grid units and spacing. However, make sure that you use your own, of course, if you have your own style guidelines in your office, in your company, adopt them. Users must recognize it's your application. But stick to grid, and for giving a clear example, what will not pass the store is, for example, if you have your own commanding, you don't use app bar, and you use something somewhere that people have to find out. You use too much Chrome. If you use your logo for design and for theming, that's perfectly fine. But if you place elements in a way that it doesn't align to the silhouette, it will not pass. But it's not very easy to explain this one. It also depends on what you mean exactly, but theming and skinning is totally acceptable. Make sure you align to the grid. Also, take a look at some of the games that are in there. You will see that the games are not, per se, applying any of the silhouettes in Windows 8 because they are about doing space shuttles and whatever. So it really depends on the context of your application. If you are going in more detail and you need more detailed answer to your specific question, I mean, you mentioned that guidance is quite restrictive. In a sense, yes, because we want users to be confident about using applications, that they know where to swipe and click in order to call the commands. But it doesn't mean you are not allowed to put a logo on the right, for example, things like that. So I hope it gives you some kind of indication. If you're very specific with a question, I would suggest that you contact me directly or you go to an app clinic if you have something to discuss more in detail. If that doesn't answer your question totally, I'm not sure. Let me switch to the next question. Okay. I don't see myself implementing a back office application into Metro. What if my app must be good at things, at many things, not just one? It's a very good question as well, indeed. So, let me see how I can answer this in the best way. If your application has to be best at 10,000 things, okay, it's a very high number, but typical line of business back office applications, I think I see what you mean. In many cases, you will still use desktop applications. Will your application be usable in touch? Maybe it's not possible because you have to go too much in detail. Well, you could do pen, and pen is very accurate. It's more accurate than mouse even. But what I normally see, and This is how I am translating. It's my view, my personal view on this. Let's say you have some deep analytics tools or CRM or, you know, the typical screens that have a lot of information, screen after screen of information. Users using it are very, very capable at it, are very productive at it because they know all those screens by heart. Now, maybe that's not the best idea to put that into a Metro application, even if it's an internal application. Maybe what you want to do is surface some of the elements that users can use in a touch, in a more mobility way of user information. For example, let's take the analytics. Your manager wants the reports, wants to know exactly how the situation is, bug reports or sales reports or whatever. So probably your manager is just going to consume that information, maybe do some annotations, do some elements. That is perfect to surface that into a Metro application. Maybe what you would like, would still have to do, or that's how I see it, what you will still do is have your full 10,000 feature application into a desktop. So the typical line of business application might still be desktop. So Metro is really, if it doesn't make sense to have it as a touch application, to have the space, to have the content before Chrome, then maybe it's not to be a Metro application or only a Metro application. Maybe you still, it's, for example, I don't see myself programming in a Visual Studio in Metro, if you see what I mean. I don't see myself, well, doing a lot of implementations in for example, using a Photoshop with all the detailed masks and all the commands you can do there in Metro. I do see myself retouching pictures in Metro, so maybe resurfacing that functionality into an application in Metro or into two applications in Metro. So I hope that answers some of your questions. For the moment, I don't see any other questions, so make sure to contact us via App Clinics if you have other questions, and I hope to see you at one of the future events. So thank you very much all, and see you next time.